We're taping this for the internet and radio.
Okay, fine.
We're talking with Ian Hunter, of course, known for many for all the young dudes from Mott the Hoople, and of course, even heard today on TV with the President of the United States version of his great song "Cleveland Rocks" on the Drew Carey Show, and he's still touring, still doing many things. But what an incredible career you've had! How are you today?
Fine, thanks.
The new CD, Ian Hunter, Once Bitten, Twice Shy, 2 CD set from Columbia Legacy, has a lot of your stuff. Not everything, though, but a lot of it.
Yeah. It's about 38 tracks. 18 haven't really seen the light of day before.
It's kind of nice. It must be, like, for you, a real kick to have all these songs that no one ever heard before or no one ever could buy now available in their hands.
Well, it started off in England. They'd done a Mott the Hoople triple thing in England, and they decided to follow it a year later with this one. And then the Americans picked up on this one, fortunately, and they're putting it out. But it stretches back, from 75.
A lot of good stuff in here.
Yeah, not all of it, but some of it.
Some of it's what they call filler, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I find you one of the most talented songwriters that has come along. You've written a ton of songs, rocking songs, ballads, all types that are covered on here. And you were quoted as saying at one point, there's no talent involved at all in writing songs. You're just blessed. I kind of agree with you in terms of the fact that you really can't teach someone to write good music. They really have to have it inside them. But it is quite a talent, though, whether it's innate or whether it's something you work on.
Well, if there is a talent, it's what you do with it when you get it. This idea comes out of nowhere. It's probably the last true magic left. But then sometimes it's not the complete idea. Sometimes it's a verse, or sometimes it's a hook, or sometimes it's just a line of a lyric, You may be left to finish the rest of that. It's a partial gift.
Well, that's true, yeah.
And you've got to finish it up, Then it becomes a question of quality control.
Have there been times where a voice in your head kind of dictates the whole thing to you and you just write it down?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I find that a lot of songwriters do that. They have this that and it's I don't know about in your case, but in many cases, if you really want to sit down and write, you can't. You have to wait for that muse to be there.
I just wrote one now. I'm in the process of. I'm just in the early recording stages of a new one, and there's one on there called "The Good Samaritan," and I have the oddest feeling with it that it just didn't belong to me. It just came through me. You know what I mean? It came and the lyric came so quickly as well. That happens with quick songs. It's like you were almost used as a conduit.
Yeah, well, that's true. In many cases, I think that's true. Because it isn't stuff that, I write myself, and many times stuff just comes into my head, and I have to just write it down.
Yeah.
And it isn't even conscious me writing it. It's just like kind of a subconscious thing.
yeah, I think you've got it. I don't know, it may have something to do with you, but you don't know really. It's an area that's not been we haven't got to that yet.
Did you have parents who were involved in music or something in the family?
I had a grandmother who was extremely eccentric, but that's the nearest we got. No, my father's a policeman.
Really? Now, what did he think when son Ian became a musician? Was that something that was frowned upon?
Yeah. Yeah.
And what did he think when you became a huge success?
He still wasn't impressed. But I wrote a book. I wrote a book, and then he was impressed.
Well,
Because he'd always tried to write a book.
you didn't just write a book, you wrote a huge bestseller in 1972 that has been reprinted tons of times.
Yeah, well, when I wrote that, it got reviews in the Times and the New Statesman and stuff like that. My father's very impressed by that. Because he tried to witness. My father was like a man who loved to bet on the horses. He was homophobic, and he was a copper. So he wrote a book about being a copper, a homophobic copper, who bet on the horses, you see. And it didn't really work. I mean, every publisher in Britain was gay anyway. I said, Dad, this is not going to work. But he persisted, and of course he never got anything published. But when I got mine published, he was over the moon.
Wow. Now, has he ever said to you, hey, son, can you get this published for me?
Well, I've got it. I've still got his manuscripts, you know. He died in 1981, but I still have his stuff, and it's just it's not the writing, it's what he writes about, you know. He's a bit of a bigot, you know. You're going back a few years, people were.
Right. And my dad died in 1981 as well.
Mm-hmm.
December of that year. Not a good time.
Very sudden.
Really?
Good way to go, yeah.
Well, as long as it's painless,
yeah.
It's all right. You know, it's interesting. I'm looking over your the works that you did. Obviously, I actually have the original single of Mott the Hoople's "All the Young Dudes."
Wow.
I was a big fan of Mott the Hoople. That, of course, was a David Bowie song.
Yes.
And how did you guys obtain that song? Did he present it to you guys, or did you get it to the publishers? How did it happen?
What happened was Mott the Hoople were basically finished. They were working out of converted gas tanks in Switzerland. And we decided to knock it on the head. And when we went back to London, Pete Watts, the bass player, rang up David because he heard David was looking for a band. David at that time was just forming the Spiders.
Mm-hmm.
And David said, "Well, why are you looking for a job?" And he said, "Well, we've split up." And David said, "Oh, you can't do that." Apparently, he was a fan of the bands. And so he immediately offered a Suffragette City, which I turned down because radio was against us. We'd had four stabs at a single and nothing had happened, so radio didn't really want to play us anymore. We knew it would take a special song. And he came back later with All the Young Dudes.
Hmm.
And when I heard it, my first thought was, I can do it, and my second thought was, why is he giving it away? Because it's such a great song, you know.
A Suffragette City is quite a good song, too.
It wouldn't have done it for us, though.
Yeah. Now, All the Young Dudes, obviously, was the perfect...
When radio is against you, it's something special has to happen, you know.
Yeah.
We knew that.
Yeah. Well, talking about something special, in the late 70s, around the spring of 79, you came out with an album that I thought is still one of the best albums ever put out, and a great title as well, You're Never Alone with a Schizophrenic. Some great, great tunes on that album.
Yeah, that was good. It was pretty quick as well.
Really?
Yeah, it was just one of those. I'd done an album called Overnight Angels, and I wasn't very happy with it, so I really got to work on Schizophrenic, you know.
Well, that thing had some incredible songs on it, from Ships and Cleveland Rocks and The Daylight Comes. I mean, some really incredible tunes.
Yeah, it was the East Street Band.
Yeah.
Rolston, John Cale, and the East Street Band.
Right.
And the Power Station and Bob Clearmountain. It was a fortuitous circle of friends.
Hmm. You were talking, you just mentioned Ronson. Let's talk a little bit about him. You guys had an incredible relationship on and off for a number of years with the Hunter Ronson Band and a lot of great stuff that you guys did together. I know he passed away in 93. He must be someone that you miss dearly.
Well, I mean, he rang me and told me in 1990. So there was 2 years, you know.
Mm.
That was very difficult. When he finally died, everybody else started mourning, and I stopped, you know.
Right.
But it was really difficult because even when we didn't work together, we always, our families hung out together. So I lost an extremely good friend, one of the best friends I've ever had.
Yeah,
but I mean, a lot of people have, you know, and there's not much you can do about it.
I know that you also headlined the Mickey Ronson Memorial Concert, which must have meant so much to you.
That was difficult. I mean, the most difficult thing was the memorial itself. That was the hardest, because his wife asked me to do the thing, you know.
Yeah.
And I think my heart's in real good condition, or at least it was then, because it was coming out of my skin. You know?
Mm.
It was the only time I've ever felt my heart sort of physically banging away at my ribcage, you know.
Yeah. There's a book that's out called All the Young Dudes, the official biography. How much input into that did you have?
Is that Campbell Devine, that one?
The one by Cherry Red Books.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. He rang up everybody and he talked to people, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, Campbell Devine seems to be a big fan.
He's an enormous fan, you know.
Yeah. He did a nice job on the liner notes in this project as well.
Oh, he says I influence people I don't think I influence and things like that. He's way over the top.
Nothing wrong with that either, though.
No, I mean, if it wasn't for people like Campbell, you know, things wouldn't get done.
You know, I was looking at we're talking with Ian Hunter, by the way, if you just tuned in. I was looking at your background and some of the people who covered your material. And, you know, we all know about Great White and the President of the United States and also Status Quo and Boys to Cult. But I'm looking here, Bonnie Tyler, Barry Manilow, Willie Nelson, The Monkees?
Yeah.
What song did The Monkees cover?
Going Through, no, that was Blue Oyster Cult. Every Step of the Way, it was called. It was on an album called All the Good Ones Taken.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
By The Monkees?
By The Monkees, obviously.
And what about Barry Manilow? Did he do Ships?
Yeah, he did Ships.
Okay, yeah, because he had a hit with that one.
Yeah, that got about. It was top 10, I know.
Yeah, it was a top 10 hit, yeah. That's a great song, but it's amazing that a song written by you could be sung by Barry Manilow.
Well, I'll tell you, what's his name? The guy I've lost his name. He's the head of a record company, Arista.
Clive Davis?
Clive, yeah.
Yeah.
Clive was always like my stuff, and apparently when he had these people in, you know, these sort of diva-type people, he would play music in the background while they were in, you know, when they were in for a meeting or something.
Yeah.
And that's what he did. He played Ships in the background when Manilow went in to see him one day. And Manilow, who I believe had just lost his dad, turned around and said, "What's that?" You know. And that's how that came about.
Wow. What does it feel like to listen every week to the Drew Carey Show and hear your theme on it? I assume that's good for the royalties anyway.
It feels wonderful.
Do you like the version that they did of the song?
Yes, I do. Yeah. It's odd because a lot of covers that I've heard, I've never liked initially. And I tend to like them after a while, but not initially.
Yeah.
But with the Presidents, it's no nonsense. It's almost status quo-ish, isn't it? It's just straight down the line.
Yeah.
No messing.
Yeah.
I thought it was really good.
And, you know, there's another thing here. Willie Nelson, what did Willie Nelson do of yours?
He did a song called This Is My Lawyer Talking to His Lawyer. And according to his lawyer, who told my lawyer, he did a song called The Other Man, which is, I think, on the new Sony compilation. And I think he did it twice, but I don't think it's ever come out.
Oh, really?
I think it's in a warehouse in Austin.
Oh.
That's how that came about.
It's just hard to believe, again, you know, when you think of Ian Hunter's.
Well, apparently the Everly Brothers were going to do it. And then his lawyer said to my lawyer, "Don't let them do it because we want to do it." And it was that Everly Brothers album that sold them. It sold quite a lot, actually. It would have been in the 80s. And they had a resurgence. So we didn't let it go on there because we were waiting for Willie.
Mm.
And then Willie never sort of... Apparently he's got hundreds of songs that he's never put out. All in this warehouse.
Yeah, I know that you've played over the last few years with some incredible folks, from Axl Rose and Slash, from Guns N' Roses, to Roger Daltrey and Meatloaf. What kind of thrill is that for you to be up there with these guys, or is it more of a thrill for them to be up with you?
I really don't know. I mean, it varies, doesn't it?
You know, Meatloaf has an incredible voice, that guy.
I thought that it was one of the weirdest ones the effect that it had on me was when Axl and Slash got up with us. We were playing the Palace, Mick and I, in LA, and they got up and they got really slagged off the following morning for getting up with us.
Really?
But I thought they wiped the floor with us. Because it was the attitude.
Yeah.
The attitude was so great. And I said to Mick afterwards, I said, "We're getting too prissy. We're getting too tight." Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
We felt, all of a sudden, I felt like a couple of ballerinas standing. Because Slash came on and planted himself, you know. And Axl started running around.
Yeah.
And he told me this great story, Axl, that he found once bitten twice sore. And his manager was Great White's manager as well.
Ah.
And Axl said they were going to use it, but then his manager, who was a Scottish guy, persuaded him to let Great White do it, who needed a single at the time.
Well, they got it. They got a big hit out of that.
Well, yeah, but it would have been even bigger if the Roses had done it, you know.
That's probably true. Guns N' Roses was huge.
Well, that album, the one he was talking about, it would have been on, did 8 mil.
Ugh.
And I think the other version did about 2.5, something like that.
Yeah.
So I lost out on that one.
Well, you know, I want to talk to you about one of the developments that It's interesting, and then of course is the internet and the way music is distributed. There's lots of controversy with what's going on with Napster and things like that. I was wondering if you had any opinions on that. If you have your own site, if you're going to be doing stuff through the internet,
Oh yeah, we got IanHunter.com. It's up and running. It's
is it?
good too.
Yeah.
It's really nice.
And what's up on IanHunter.com?
There's lots of different pages, but probably the only difference between ours and a lot of others is there's a page called The Horse's Mouth, which actually directly comes from me. I mean, I won't answer each individual email. I get about 10,000 hits a day on it. But I'll give a generalized view every now and again, you know what I mean? And the longest I haven't changed it for is a month, which is now. I've got to change it now.
Yeah.
So I try and keep them up to date, you know.
Hey, you guys should put a little link to the PMP network site so people can hear this interview.
Well, that we're in the process of doing a lot of that stuff, you know.
Because we're going to put a link to your site on our site so that people can check you out.
Well, that would be great, you know.
What do you think about this, the whole thing with Napster and downloading of songs? You know, do you feel comfortable with people downloading the stuff you've written without you getting paid for it?
I got a feeling. The way I'm looking at it right now is they both have a point. You know, Metallica will say they're nicking our stuff. That's true. But then the industry will say we're selling more records. That's also true. I'm sitting there looking at it, and fans tell me it doesn't matter what we download, we have to have the record. You know, whether it's the artwork or I don't know what it is. But I think a true fan always has to get the record, whether they got something else free on a burn down or whatever, you know.
Yeah. I still don't think that this will ever replace, you know, buying a CD or whatever method there is. I mean, they may sell on a disc, a small disc later on, or some other format, but I don't think that'll ever replace, you know, going to the music store and buying what you want.
I don't know, because you're talking evolution now.
Yeah.
Different people, different generations have different habits. You know, to us, what was normal will be, you know, whatever is going to be now is going to be normal to them.
Of course, Ian, I got to admit that I'm one of the last people to have bought a CD machine. I really wanted my records. And
yeah.
I was so upset when they kind of pulled them all out of the stores and all we could buy was CDs or cassettes.
No, it's you can't stop it. This is the way it goes. It's progress. You know, sometimes it's good, sometimes it's bad.
Yeah, you mentioned you're working on a new CD. Is it going to be with Columbia or have you got another label?
The label, I have two different labels, one for America and one for the rest of the world. I'm right in the middle of it with both of them, and neither of them are small labels, and they're not big labels either.
Yeah.
If I go with a big label now, I'm so far down on the pecking order, I'm not going to get a shot. I didn't get a shot the last couple of times I put a record out. You know, you really need major marketing management with them people. But I found a label here and a label in England that will work me extremely hard. And we'll see what happens, you know.
Can you ever predict? I mean, you mentioned before that you were looking for a big hit with Mott the Hoople and saw all the young dudes and kind of knew that was going to be a hit. Can you tell when you're writing a song that you got a hit on your hands?
Sometimes yes, sometimes no. We had a song, I remember, we had a song called All the Way from Memphis. And I made Dick Asher, who was head of CBS in England at that time, swear to me that he would never put it out as a single. Because I'd had so much trouble with it. And he waited till I went to America, and then he immediately put it out. And it was a top 10 single. So, and then other ones, like Once Bitten, I knew it all along, didn't I?
Yeah. Hey, all the way from Memphis, I think as soon as you hear that song, you do that, it had a hit all over it.
Sometimes it can get clouded. See, what happened with Memphis was I couldn't find any words to it. And it got to the point where, like, they were mixing, and I still didn't have the words. You know, track was done, everything was done. I was still blind as a bat with it. And by the time I got it, I think I was so annoyed with it, it put me off the thing altogether, you know.
Do you enjoy writing rockers more than ballads, or does it make a difference to you?
It varies. Right now, the songs I'm writing now, this is the fast album. There's only a couple of slower things on it. And I find them much harder to write, the fast ones. If they come to you, great, you know. But I mean, ballads are a lot easier because you've got more time, you've got more space, and you've got more room to say what you want to say.
Now, your Diary of a Rock and Roll Star was a huge hit, and it's been re-released as Reflections of and all over the place. Have you thought about writing a follow-up book?
I've thought about it, yeah, but that had a kind of a natural climax, you know, and it's a beginning.
Yeah.
You know, beginnings are always interesting.
What do you think of the comeback of people like Meatloaf, who was gone for so long and all of a sudden got huge again, and now he's kind of going where he was before? But
Well,
do you,
I think when he gets together with Steinman, everything works.
yeah.
But when he's not with Steinman, nothing works. It don't work for Jim, and it don't work for him.
Do you think that there'll be a song that'll come out from you that'll put you back where you were before with all the young dudes right at the top of the charts?
I don't really know, and I don't really care. But what I do care about is the quality of what I do. That seems to loom larger as the years go by. I mean, I'm not hurting financially. I don't have to do it if I don't want to do it. So therefore, I have time, and I'm trying to do something that's, once you put the thing down, it's there forever.
Yeah.
And I would really like to be remembered for quality, and that's what I'm aiming at more than anything.
Well, certainly this new CD collection, Ian Hunter, Once Bitten, Twice Shy from Columbia Legacy, will help cement that reputation.
Oh, well, thank you.
I would assume that will do it. You are now just a suburban, you're a suburban family now. Can you live in Connecticut, right?
Yeah. Well, I'm in New York as well.
Yeah.
I've got a little place in New York.
But how many children do you have?
Altogether, I've got three.
And what's their ages?
One's 35, one's 28, and one's 19.
And any of them musically inclined?
The youngest one's got a band called, Jesse his name is, and he's got a band called American Degenerate. My name's Ian Hunter Patterson, my full name. He calls himself Jesse Patterson. And he's got American Degenerate in New York. And my daughter, she has a band in London. And my eldest son, he has a software company, and he employs 39 people. So he's doing fine.
So they're all doing well.
Yeah.
And I'm just wondering if the music bug caught on. I guess it did. Now, have you ever played with any of the kids?
My daughter opened for me on the last tour I did in England, which was in June this year.
What was that like to have your daughter on stage with you?
Oh, it's great, but it's a pain, I hate watching anyone in my family. I hate it.
Really?
Yeah, is this nepotism? Is this real? Is the reaction real? You know what I mean? She's a different generation, so her music's different to mine. My youngest son, he's another one. He's a different generation. His music's different to mine. I can't. It drives me nuts. I wish they were doing something else.
That's funny. Well, hopefully they'll come up with just half the talent of Dad, and they'll be adding quite a bit to the music industry. Ian Hunter's been my guest, and again, you can go get information on him at ianhunter.com, or go over to your record store or music store and get the Columbia Legacy new CD called Once Bitten, Twice Shy. It's a two-CD set with a lot of great stuff, including many things that have never been heard before. Thanks so much for taking the time out to talk to us today.
All right then, Mark.
Take care.
Very welcome.